This is Drew Mackey, and you're listening to the 100th episode of Singing Mountain. And when I say it's the 100th episode, I actually mean it's the 103rd or maybe the 104th. Or if you're looking on iTunes, it's somewhere in the 90s, which is very confusing. And there's a good reason for that discrepancy. But this is the 100th episode. The explanation is very boring. And I'm not going to bore you with it. I'm here to play music and not explain weird technical problems. Happy 100th episode, me. The track I open with is Baby Bird, which is Idea's theme from Brave the Default, which is one of my all-time favorite VGM compositions ever. It was the song that inspired me to do an all-saxophone episode, where I looked at use of saxophone and sax synth in video games. Pretty good episode, if I do say so. It's episode 13. And it's gonna kind of be an outlier for what I'm doing here, because I kind of brainstormed for a while on what the best way to celebrate 100 episodes would be, and I decided on this. This episode is going to be all VGM gems, so to speak. VG gems? No, that's stupid. I don't like that. You know that thing when you hear a song for the first time and it just like clicks with you so intensely that as soon as the song is done, you're like, oh, I need to listen to that song again. Well, this is kind of that. This is going to be all songs that I didn't know, had never heard, or just had kind of heard but never really appreciated until I started doing this show. And in the process of doing the show, ended up discovering amazing tracks that I felt very strong feelings about and could listen to again and again and again. Just like those absolute winners that I liked at the time and I'm liking enough to bring them all back into the spotlight for this celebratory episode. So the episode is going to be all songs that you've heard before but I think are worth listening to again, and I think it's going to be a pretty strong episode. Before I get into the music, I need to say some thank yous, actually. 10 thank yous to all the people who pledged money on Patreon. You can pledge money at 3 different levels on Patreon as of now, and the lowest level is just $1 a month, so it's $12 a year. And for supporting Singing Mountain in this way, you get access to all the bonus content, and hold on, I'm going to talk about that in a second, and you get a thank you on air. And I figured since this was kind of a milestone episode, this would be the episode I thank everyone who's pledged any amount of money on Patreon. So, in order, I would like to thank Tim Latshaw, Chris, no last name, Finlay McLeod, Margaret Pants, I don't know if that's a real name, but I really hope it is, Eric O. Mayer, Trevor Aldinger, The Messenger, who, hi Alex, I know who you are, Michael P. Duell, Carlos, no last name, but I know who you are too, Mirabai Knight, Wizen Kelly, and finally, Perry Crumples. Who is not Barry Crumbles, but now that I mention it, kind of want a Barry Crumble right now, so that would be pretty nice. Thank you to everyone who's pledged money. If you'd like to support this podcast, please do so. Go to patreon.com/singingmountain, and for just $1 a month, you can get some cool bonus material, such as another episode that's just like this one. So this episode is about 20 tracks altogether, the 20 tracks I love best, and whittled down to one champion list. but there's a lot of songs that just didn't make the cut, even though I love them too. So I decided that I would make just a bonus episode full of VGM gems in celebration of my 100th episode. And if you pledge even the base level on Patreon, you get access to this content. I'm not gonna say now, but like very close to now. It'll show up in your RSS feed if you have the Patreon only Singing Mountain feed. Please look forward to that. I also kind of get it that some people don't have extra money to spend on a podcast, much less a VGM podcast. I really understand. Money is tight for a lot of people, and sometimes you really cannot afford to give a dollar a month to a podcast. I'm going to make a workaround for you guys. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, I think I have a way that we can make this episode available for everyone, but you have to wait to the end of the episode to find out how. Yes, I'm holding you captive. I'm getting into the music very shortly, but just as a little preface, in addition to playing music and giving you some context for why I'm playing it, I'm also going to be answering and responding to the results of the survey I put online at singingmountain.com/survey. You guys shared some information about yourself, and it was really interesting, and I figure you guys probably like hearing about you, so I'm going to go over some of the more surprising things I learned and then just answer some of the questions you posed directly. So if you asked a question, you might hear it answered by me, Drew Mackey, host of Singing Mountain. But first, music. This episode is in no particular order, but first I'm playing the track Blue Blue Moon, or Essential Vitamins, or just Stage 3 theme. I've seen it titled all three ways, from Super Adventure Island, composed by Yuzo Koshiro. This track initially appeared in episode 39, Super Adventure Island in 30 Minutes. And I have to say, I had no memory of this soundtrack being as good as it is, or composed by Yuzo Koshiro, so of course it would be good. But if you played the NES versions of Adventure Island, you have a certain idea for how the game should sound, and Super Adventure Island, the Super NES installment of the series, does not sound that way. It sounds cooler and hipper and funkier, and maybe it doesn't even make sense in the context, but it sounds really good. So this is the underwater theme from Super Adventure Island, and it's awesome. Please enjoy. Okay, so that was the first track. And then in between tracks, I'm going to be doing little survey stuff. So first, I want to say thank you very much for not making me feel old. I asked how old you were, and by quite a large majority, most of you answered my age bracket anyway, 36 to 40, which being 37 years old, it's always kind of nice to know that you're appropriately aged because this is the point in your life when you begin to suspect that you are not. But also, it totally makes sense that most people in that age range would listen to this podcast because that's what I'm playing and I'm mining our collective nostalgia. So of course, that age group likes this podcast. I'm more impressed that people much younger are listening to this podcast. And by much younger, I mean one person who is under 18 years old. Why are you here? Are you just cool for your age? Tell me about yourself in a non-creepy way. So that was gratifying, but the question about gender was sort of not what I was hoping for. I could have guessed that this was going to be a sausage party, but I didn't know how much of a sausage party it's actually going to be. Of the about 100 people who responded to the survey, 4 said they were female, which is, I knew it was going to be low, but I didn't think it was going to be that low. 4 other people described themselves as gender nonconforming, and 1 person described themselves as gender nonconforming female. Everyone else is male. I kind of like to think that I make a forum that accommodates a diverse group of people here. But again, this is a video game music podcast, and as diverse as you try to make it, it's still going to be mostly dudes, apparently. So I credit that too. Who was playing video games back in like 1994? And also the fact that like most of my social media following happens to be like gay nerds. So I guess that would explain it. But to the girls and women in the audience, thank you very much for being part of this little community. I hope I'm not doing anything that's like turning you off or scaring away your fellow female gamers. Okay, so the next track I'm playing for you comes from the Neo Geo title Elemental Master. It's a kind of not fun to play Neo Geo side-scrolling platforming fantasy game, but it has an amazing soundtrack. The specific song I'm playing is titled Like the Wind, and it was composed by Toshiharu Yamanishi, and I originally played it in episode 64, Hard Rock Minus Guitars, and it's kind of epic. It has a fun rock sound, but also kind of a new wave disco sound, and you probably know by now that that's my total jam. And I wouldn't recommend playing this game, but I would recommend listening to this one track, so please enjoy. Okay, so another question I asked you guys is how you identify yourself politically. And again, I was actually kind of surprised by this because one person picked far right and one person picked between middle and far right, and everyone else was very liberal, actually. And I guess that's surprising to me because I look at who's listening to the show, and it's people all across the country, and I figured that it would be a little bit more spread out. And I know people of both political persuasions enjoyed video games back in the day and still enjoy video games, but yeah, for whatever reason, most of the people who answered happened to be very, very liberal. Not as spread out as I thought it was going to be. And yes, in fact, most of the people who listen to the show are American, and then Mexican, and then Canadian in that order. So we really have North America being represented very nicely. There are some surprises, though, for people from other countries that I didn't know would be listening. Hello, Estonia. Hello, Zimbabwe. I didn't think I'd see you here. Also, a ton of Australians and only one New Zealander, which means my family is not listening to the show, which I could have predicted. Among people who are actually from the U.S., most of you are from Illinois, by a surprising majority, which sort of makes sense. I know a few people from Illinois, like a lot of great quality nerds come from Illinois, but only one person said they were from California, which means either none of my friends here in Los Angeles are listening, or they just didn't take the survey. Either way, you suck. And I can say that because they're probably not listening. So the third track I'm going to play is a Koji Kondo original from the NES era. Probably not lesser known. I think it's come into its own in recent years, but for a long time, it was a composition most American gamers would not have been familiar with. In doing stuff for this show, I've come to think it's maybe one of the strongest compositions Koji Kondo ever made during the NES era, and that's saying a lot. It is the field theme from Mysterious Castle Murasame, the samurai game from which the, like, C-level Nintendo character Takamaru comes. It gives a sense of a bygone era of Japan, but also still sounds very much like a Koji Kondo Nintendo composition and just gets stuck in my head, and I love it so much. Just in case people listening to the show might not be as familiar with it as they would be with, like, Kid Icarus, Metroid, Mario, or Link, I'm gonna play it now. I originally played this in episode 51 when Smash Brothers remixes improve upon the originals, and that improved version is great. If you go back and listen to that episode, it makes it sound like kind of like a mariachi western, which is amazing, but this version's very good too. So from here on out, I'm going to be responding to the various questions that I just kind of allowed open answers for, where you guys could write whatever you want. And some of you said some interesting things. One of the prompts I gave is, if you could change one thing about the show, it would be... One person said, 2 episodes a week, 1 mixtape, 1 standard. Also, in all caps, maybe start pulling in some comparisons between fan remakes, OC remix, or something against original. That is an ambitious suggestion that I will be unable to do, because... I don't know if you know this, but I host and produce another podcast, and then I produce 2 more podcasts, and I will never, ever, ever do more than 1 episode a week, unless there's something wrong. If I start doing more than 1 episode a week, please, like, look into me and make sure I'm okay, because I just can't do that. But thank you for the suggestion. Someone said, I don't think I have an answer for this. Drew should totally say Irish wristwatch, though. Irish wristwatch. I don't get it. Is that like a magic spell or something? What is Irish wish? Oh, I see. It's a tongue twister. Didn't know that till right now. All right. Well, You got me. Two more suggestions are more nudity on Drew's part and Drew records with a hat on. First of all, how do you know that I'm not recording this podcast entirely naked or recording it with a hat on? You don't, unless you're watching me, which is weird. Second of all, I like how it says on more nudity on Drew's part, as if someone else might be naked than me, because it's just me. But you were specific, and I thank you for the suggestion. All right, track 4 comes from Sonic the Fighters, but you wouldn't have heard it in the game because the stage it was supposed to be paired with got cut from the final cut. That makes sense, right? Yeah, that makes sense. It is called Sunset Town, and it was composed by Maki Maro and Takanobu Mitsuyoshi, and it was originally supposed to be the theme for a stage associated with Honey the Cat, who is a Sonic character that never ended up seeing the light of day and who was based on a Fighting Vipers character named Honey. Very complicated. The song is amazing. It is very Italo Disco, and in fact, reminds me specifically of this one song called Boys, Boys, Boys by a performer named Sabrina, no last name. Surprise, she really likes boys. It's a decent track, and so is this one, and please enjoy it now, because you would have never gotten the chance to enjoy it in a video game. Okay, so more answers I got to the prompt, if you could change one thing about the show, it would be less apologizing to the audience for telling personal stories or irrelevant rants. And then another person said, just a little self-deprecation. Thank you. I understand the motivation in saying that, but this is kind of how I operate. You have to understand that I grew up surrounded by people who never wanted to hear about my thoughts about video games or the TV I liked or the movies I liked. It's a very lonely existence. And that being my entire like childhood and adolescence kind of did a number on me, and I kind of feel like I'm not allowed to talk about video games. So even though I've had this show for like 100 episodes, it is really hard for me to feel like I don't have to apologize for having an opinion about like media that matters to me, and that includes video games. So I guess I'll try to minimize that, but like that's something for my therapist to deal with. I don't know if that's something I can actually like work with on my own. But thank you. Someone said they wanted more shows that compare video game BGM to other pop culture. Your Twin Peaks episode was the best. I will be doing this, however. It kind of takes a lot more thinking to make a really good episode, but we'll see what I can come up with. I got two suggestions for guess, basically. One person said more analyses and deep dive and more episodes with Catherine. Another person said bring Glenn back or have more guests in general. These are both really good ideas. Yeah, I'll not be the only voice on this show, especially because people can bring in their own expertise and talk interestingly about games that I actually don't have first-hand experience with. And that's a great way to cover stuff that I don't know well. So yeah, that'll be something I'll incorporate in the future. All that said, I'm going to play a song that might be well known to some people, but is something I literally had never heard until I started working on this show, and I think it is amazing every time I listen to it. Is the theme of Adol, who A-D-O-L, who's one of the heroes from the Ys games, and the version I'm playing for you is from Ys, Ancient Ys Vanished, the PC-88 version, composed by Yuzo Koshiro. It's a great track that I initially put on episode 29, the Italo Disco episode, and it makes me happy every time I listen to it. You should enjoy it now. Okay, so the next suggestion I got from someone reads as follows. Keyword being change? Nothing, but if it was a suggestion, I think perhaps branching out into more musicians from different countries perhaps could be a thing? Yes, that could be a thing. It probably won't, just because, by and large, the composers that move me on an emotional level happen to be Japanese. Also, most of the composers composing video game music happen to be Japanese, but it's sometimes hard for me to latch on to, in general, music by Western composers. I'll do my best. Don't know what it is about my brain that clicks with Japanese composers, but it does. Also, someone suggested more music from games released after 2000. Sure, maybe I'll do that. The point of this show is really focusing on the late 80s to early 2000s and the video games that came out there, because that music, I think, just sounds better. I think I've described it before, where people working with more limited technological means had to work harder to make really strong melodies that sounded good no matter what the technical limitations were. And when you remove those technical limitations, you can get something that has a very interesting, real-sounding composition but may not be very catchy. I'm a sucker for a catchy melody, and I just think melodies were catchier back in the 8-bit, 16-bit, and just a little bit beyond that eras. And that's where I stand on that. But hey, the next track I'm playing is by a Western composer, so that's something. It is David Wise. It is his soundtrack to Donkey Kong Country 3 for the Game Boy Advance. If you listen to episode 24, Dixie Kong's Double Soundtracks, you'll know that there are actually two separate soundtracks for Donkey Kong Country 3. One by Evelyn Fisher, who's the woman who composed the Super NES version of that soundtrack. And then, for technical reasons, they couldn't use that music on the Game Boy Advance, so they tapped David Wise, who'd composed most of Donkey Kong Country and all of Donkey Kong Country 2, just make a new soundtrack from scratch. I really like Evelyn Fisher's work in the first version of the game, but David Wise is David Wise, and some of his stuff is really good. So I'm going to play Cascade Capers, the waterfall stage theme, from that version of the game. Thank you. The next suggestion I got was as follows. Not really about the show itself, but maybe having a platform for fan input and music suggestions could be nice. This is a great idea, actually. So if you're on Patreon, I'm going to be giving you guys little polls about like, hey, which episode should I do next? This or this? And you'll get a chance there to give your input. But I'm also going to start soliciting more on Facebook and Twitter. And people keep asking for a Facebook group as opposed to a Facebook page. Facebook groups allow for a lot more interactivity, and you guys apparently can talk amongst yourselves. People really seem to enjoy it. I don't quite get it because I'm 37 and some social media things are kind of lost on me. But because people have asked for it, I'm going to launch that group. If it's not ready by the time this episode is up, it'll be ready very soon. So look forward to that. Someone said, I'm loving the slowed down, chill / vaporwave stuff you're doing. More of that, please. Thank you. I'm glad people enjoyed my little experiment. I'm going to do something else, but I don't want to do the same idea again and again. So I actually have to spend more time with Ableton, the program I use to make all those tracks, and find out how else I can screw with music and make it sound weird and interesting. But thank you for that. There'll be something more like that in the future. Okay, the next song I'm playing is from Bomberman 64, and I had no idea how beautiful this game's soundtrack is. There's a water theme stage in that game, and it's stage theme is titled Blue Resort. It was composed by Akafumi Tada and originally appeared on episode 28, Have a Pixelated Summer. It's gorgeous. It's a lot more gorgeous than I think you might expect that a Bomberman background music would be. Even if you have played this game, maybe take a moment to listen to it separate from blowing everything up, which is how you play Bomberman. Okay, so another of the prompts I gave was, if you had to put it into words, what separates Singing Mountain from other VGM podcasts, what would it be? I was just curious to know, like, if there was something that distinguished this from other shows, and was very interested by what you guys said. One person said that the distinction was, quote, a relatable host who is devoid of injecting political opinion into a show that does not require it. It's a breath of fresh air, and Drew comes off as an old childhood friend. Far be it for me to say, had I known him as a kid, I feel like he could have been my best friend. That is a very nice thing to say, but also interesting, sort of, because on one hand, there's not very much politics on this show because it's about video game music, and like politics is super saturated in almost every other aspect of my life that I don't really need to dwell on it here. But the flip side of this is that one of my goals in making this show was, I'm a gay man, I know sort of what it's like to have been, like, I mean, not a straight white male back in an earlier age of the internet, and it's gotten a lot better since then, but there was just a time when it felt like my opinions about video games were not something that anyone really wanted to listen to, and I feel like a lot of women who play video games probably also felt that way and still feel that way. And one of the things I wanted to do is try to make this be a show where, like, you like put someone who was like a woman or queer or trans or anything could listen to the show and know that I was a supportive person. So in that sense, I mean, that is kind of a political statement of being like, hey, like, just in case you were worried that I was going to say something that is going to offend you or you're going to end up hating the show, I'm not. I'm going to work really hard to make this a place where lots of different people can come and possibly not get offended. That is sort of a political thing, I think, maybe. I don't know. But I understand how you meant the compliment, and I say thank you. Someone else just responded to the same prompt, what makes the show different, and just responded, gay. I don't know if that person meant that positively or negatively. And then there's a listener who's been supportive of me on, like, even before I was doing podcasts, just a social media friend who was interested in my creative projects. And for some reason, she's had this problem where she can't post an iTunes review. I don't really understand why, but she's been unable to. It's been like a little saga where I've heard that the iTunes review isn't up and she apologizes. And she just sent me the text of the review she's always tried to post. And I'm going to read it now because I really appreciate the effort and it was a nice thing for her to write. Singing Mountain is probably best described as retro gaming music reception studies from a gay perspective. I've listened to queer video gaming podcasts, R.A.P. Boy Howdy. I don't know who Boy Howdy is, but I feel like I'm missing out on that. And video game music theory / history podcasts, parentheses Super Mercado Brothers, which I do listen to. But never has there been a podcast so precisely tailored to my own particular tastes as Singing Mountain. The thing is, I'd probably love this podcast even if it were just mediocre, but it turns out to be so supremely well-produced it knocks my socks off. Drew researches like the journalist he is, but speaks with the enthusiasm of a fan, and that combination, obscure facts about VGM history and their intersection with larger cultural moments, juxtaposed with an unapologetically subjective discussion of his own personal history and the emotions these pieces evoke in him, is just not to be found anywhere else on the internet. I love his playlists compiled from the mood or imagined setting each track conjures up when he listens to them. I love the game he plays with guests, where he makes them guess specific subgenres of game music without knowing the games. I love when he draws connections between wildly disparate things, but argues convincingly enough that I'm totally buying his conclusion at the end of the episode. This is one of my favorite podcasts in the universe, and I'm so damn glad it exists. Thank you. You know who you are. I really appreciate you writing that. That was very nice of you. It's, yeah, like, kind of as a follow-up to what I was talking about earlier. I feel like she gets it, and that makes me feel good. The track I'm playing next comes from Treasure of the Rudras, which is a Squaresoft RPG released for the Super Famicom and not for the Super NES that I kind of knew existed back in the day but had never experienced in any way and still haven't played. But now I've listened to the entire soundtrack and I am just in love with it. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. The track I'm playing is Night Shift and is composed by Ryuji Sasai. It initially was featured in episode 26, Lonesome Journeys, which was the shorter of the two RPG overworld music episodes. Listen now. So this is a quick one, and I don't understand it at all, and maybe if I talk it out now, you guys can explain to me what the hell's going on. I think this is a response to, if you could change one thing about the show, what would it be? And this person wrote, Drew's usage of beautiful, and how he pronounces the last syllable of it. What is that? What does that mean? Beautiful. Beautiful. How do you pronounce beautiful? That sounds right to me. Beautiful? Do I pronounce beautiful wrong? Beautiful. I literally feel like I say it the way every other English-speaking person does, and if there's something weird about the way I say beautiful, please tell me. It's kind of driving me nuts. Beautiful. What is that? That stress notwithstanding, I'm going to play a beautiful track for you right now. I think it's beautiful. It's from the beautiful game Dance Aerobics, the NES-era dancing game where you had to dance on the mat. Unknown composer, I still don't know who composed this, but the game actually has some pretty good music, and the composition for levels 5 and 6 is especially good. I originally used it in episode 30, VGM Dance Party, and I feel like you could dance to it right now if you wanted to. So please start dancing to this song. Now we're in the chunk of the survey where I asked people if there's a question they always wanted to ask and just wanted to post it here anonymously, what would it be and why? I was very amused that a lot of people responded, I don't know, to this question and other questions. You could have just not put anything, but I like that you were thorough and answered honestly that you didn't know. One person who did know what question they wanted to ask asked, what is your favorite RPG and why? Was it profound or was it just plain and fun and why? Final Fantasy VI was mine and it really pushed me deeper into a genre I was already swimming waist deep in. I am inclined to say Final Fantasy VI just because that was a very significant moment for me, but I might actually say the one that had the biggest impact on me was Chrono Trigger, just because it didn't feel like a lot of other pseudo-medieval Japanese RPGs. It was this different thing, and it had a unique vibe, and it just felt like I was seeing something I'd never seen anywhere else and kind of didn't know exist. And of course, the music is amazing. So Chrono Trigger is my very mainstream, very boring answer. Thank you for asking, though. The next track I'm going to play is not from Chrono Trigger. There are no Chrono Trigger tracks in this episode. It comes from Clownomania, which is a game released for the Amiga system that I initially featured in episode 31, Dancing with Mi Amiga. The Amiga features a lot of Western composers doing some cool Euro-pop-esque compositions that ended up in video games. And I don't know what Clownomania is, but the title screen theme for the game is awesome and has like depth and quirk to it that you wouldn't expect from a game called Clownomania. So have a listen to that. It's composed by Roman Werner, and it's great. Next question I got was, what was the last push that made you get up and start it? I haven't quite made my way all the way back to episode one yet. Just a few more to go. Another person similarly said, I'd like to know more about the road that led you to your love of VGM to the point you decided to make a show about it. The game that actually probably made me really love VGM was actually Final Fantasy VI, just because they did some things that I thought were interesting and surprising. I remember in the finale of that game, all the character themes get played out and you see little scenes involving those characters, and some characters share those scenes, and two characters who do are Locke, the thief, and Celis, the magic general blonde girl thing. And they're lovers. They fall in love over the course of the game, and it's not until the finale of the game that you find out that Locke's theme and Celis's theme play together. Like, the tracks are overlaid on top of each other in that final sequence, and it's really beautiful, and it's a very nice way of bringing these two characters together, showing that, like, oh, their themes were designed to interlock this whole time, you just didn't realize it. We saved that for the very end as a nice, sweet little romantic surprise. That was pretty pivotal in making me think that not only could VGM be more interesting than I maybe thought it could before, but it could be used to deepen a player's experience of a given game. Like, it would work in ways that, like, music generally doesn't work in other mediums, and I think that's really cool. And to answer the question about what made me finally start this podcast, spite, kind of. I was doing my first podcast at a co-host, and we didn't really get along, and I kind of thought it would be easy to make this little tiny VGM podcast on the side that might kick a little traffic towards the main podcast, but I quickly grew very tired with that main podcast and really started to like being in charge of my own thing where I didn't have to run everything by a co-host. So I decided to pour a lot more time into Singing Mountain, and it became a bigger thing than the original podcast ever was. So yeah, Spite. Spite's a great motivator to do stuff. The next track is titled Worth, or Walsh apparently, and it is Rune's theme from Phantasy Star 4, composed by Ippo Takeuchi and M. Gaki-chan Nakagaki. I originally used it in episode 11, Moonlight Drive, and for the life of me, I could not tell you why. It doesn't really seem like a Moonlight Drive type song, but it's a great composition. It's weird and kind of dancey in a way that I don't know would make sense because I have not played it, but it is something I've literally never got tired of listening to, and I'm going to make you listen to it right now. Here is Worth, or Walsh, Rune's theme from Phantasy Star 4. So I'm going back to the Ask Me Anything field and responding to stuff. This person wrote, someone told me you were a hardcore Trump guy, but that seems to be untrue. Yeah, that's not true. I don't know who would say that. That's a weird thing to say. That's not me. Like, again, it doesn't really end up in the podcast that often, but, like, I'm a gay guy living in Los Angeles, and I'm about as liberal as you could probably be. Another person asked, what else do you do with your time when you're not doing podcasts? What are your interests other than the wonderful world of VGM? Since I have started a small business based around podcasts, I don't do a whole lot other than podcasts. I garden. I have a dog who's adorable. If you looked at the survey, you would have seen a picture of him. His name is Thurman. I really like cooking. I really like going to the gym and working out. And just all the normal nerd stuff. I really like horror as a genre and try to watch old Italian horror movies whenever possible. But if I'm being very honest, I don't have a lot of time to do non-podcast stuff. So most of my time not working on Singing Mountain is spent working on the other podcast, which sounds kind of sad, but I did it to myself. So the next track I'm going to play for you is a great track from the fighting game Waku Waku 7. It was composed by Masato Arakawa and is titled The Sun Also Sets. It is the stage theme of a character named Dandy J, who looks like a Tom of Finland version of Indiana Jones. And it's one of those things where a Japanese composer does this vaguely Americana sounding track and just completely nails the sound in a way that makes me very impressed and makes me feel like they understand something very fundamental about America and American characters and American music. It's a really cool stage theme that originally used in episode 18, A Most Chilled Out Fisticuff, which is my collection of laid back fighting game music. Have a listen. So the next question, that's easy. When is Thurman doing an episode? Thurman, again, is my dog. He's not doing an episode. He hates podcasts because they take my time away from him. I think he's jealous of Singing Mountain. I think he wishes it would end. That's it. That's Thurman. He's literally laying on the floor sleeping right now, so he's doing just fine, but I'm sure he wishes I was paying attention to him rather than talking into a microphone. Who does he think I'm talking to? I wonder. The next track I'm going to play for you comes from the original Pocky and Rocky. It is titled, for reasons I will never understand, Gorgonzola Goblins. It's composed by Hiroyuki Iwatsuki. It has such a great vibe. It kind of sounds like an Italian horror movie, actually. And I originally used it in episode 29, Disco Night at Club Sugar, because it kind of has a dancey feel to it. Enjoy. Okay, so people ask some actually helpful questions that I feel I should probably ask. So in case you're wondering about how I make this show, here's some tips. The first person asks, what's the best source for gathering most of the tracks, especially the more obscure ones? YouTube. YouTube is my best resource for gathering music for this show. Someone will mention a video game I maybe haven't heard of or haven't heard the soundtrack to. It's probably on YouTube in full, and you can just skip through until you find something that works for you or find something that will work for one of the categories of episodes you're planning to do in the future. It is the most helpful website for me in putting this together. Another person asks, what editing software do I use to make these podcasts? I record on a Zoom recorder. That's my hardware. It's just an external little recording device and everything goes on a memory card. It's very, very handy. And then I use a mix of Hindenburg, which is kind of a primitive audio editing tool, but it's what I learned how to edit audio on, and I'm pretty fast at it now, so I keep doing it. And then also Adobe Audition, which costs a little bit, but you can do a lot of cool stuff with it that I'm not sure you can do on other audio editing programs quite as easily. And that's it. That's everything I used to make this show. The overhead needed to get the show going was very low. So if you're on the fence about whether you should start your own video game music podcast, I say just go for it. The next song I'm going to play is another track by David Wise, and it's a weird one that I was very happy to stumble upon early this year. One of the first episodes I did this year was episode 57, David Wise Before Donkey Kong Country, which is all about his work before the game that made him sort of a household name among VGM fans. David Wise is one of my favorite composers, and he manages to get a level of emotion into his compositions that is consistent and interesting, and it can be a song that is sort of a throwaway and still grabs you emotionally on some level, and I think that is a mark of a great musician. The track I'm playing for you is the title theme to Wheel of Fortune Family Edition, an NES game that shouldn't have great music, but in this case, does. Next question was, what do you think of the new Twin Peaks? Thank you. That was a great question. I love and hate it. I think about it every day. It was like an 18-hour David Lynch movie that didn't make any sense. It was beautiful and horrible and confusing and very frustrating. And I don't know what I'm supposed to take away from it. And there are parts of it that I'm still mad about, like the whole part with Audrey. What was that? Come on. That's not what we wanted from Audrey. If you don't watch Twin Peaks, you'll have no idea what I'm talking about, but don't worry, this is ending very soon. So yeah, even though I didn't like a lot of it, it's something that's resonated with me and I literally think about every day, and I can't say that about most media I've consumed in my lifetime. So I guess that's a positive review. The next track I'm playing comes from the Super NES game Demon's Crest. It is the Firebrand the Gargoyle side-scrolling fantasy RPG-ish platform games. The track is Beyond the Colosseum. It was composed by Toshihiko Horiyama, and originally it was used in the 16-bit Halloween episode. And it's dark, like you'd expect a game about demons and monsters and stuff, but you'll know it when you hear it. This game hits this part where there's a sad emotion. It's like a deep longing that you hear, and I can't explain why it's there or why it just hits me in the gut so hard, but it does every time I listen to it, and I hope you hear it too.
Thank you.
One of the questions I got was an interesting one about being a gay person in the video game enthusiasm space. This person simply asked, why isn't there more of a space online for gamers? I don't know. It's a really good question. If you're not gay, you probably wouldn't have really frequented the site gaygamer.net. It was really good for a period. It was sort of in the way that Singing Mountain, I wanted to be a place where people could go and not get harassed and for being, you know, a woman or anything that wasn't what was perceived as being like the stereotypical video game enthusiast. It was that, and it went away, and that's too bad. And maybe there's not a need for a gay specific video game platform anymore because gay people have largely been integrated into society in a bunch of other ways, including video game fandom. But I don't know. Someone, I wonder who, should do something about that. But yeah, there's not really an online space for gay video game fans in that way anymore. And I think that's too bad. Good question, though. I swear I didn't plan it this way, following up the gay gamer conversation with this, but it just kind of worked out this way. The next track I'm playing comes from a game called Twinkle Star Sprites. It is a pretty little shooter for the Neo Geo, soundtrack composed by Takao Oshima. And they do a lot of great songs. This one is a winter stage theme that sort of doesn't fit with a cool Crystal Cavern music I usually play around wintertime. I originally used it in episode 55, Slip Off the Ledge and Die in a Hole, which is, I think, a title that's very in line with my perspective on winter music. And I don't know what's called Like Sisters, but it is. And it has a good energy that is driving, but maybe just a little wistful, winter appropriate. Have a listen. So a bunch of different people asked what video games I'm actually playing nowadays, and the answer is I'm playing parts of many video games and finishing none of them because I've been kind of overscheduled. And I realize as this episode is getting very long that there are reasons why I don't have time to play video games, and this is one of them. The games I've been playing most recently include Trials of Mana, just because I am very keen to see what the official translation of the script to Seiken Densetsu 3 is. And I just downloaded River City Girls yesterday, and I think it's amazing. I'm two dungeons into Link's Awakening because I basically had to, and I realized that everything I'm mentioning right now is remakes of stuff that I would have enjoyed when I was a teenager, and I'm probably not alone in that, but it's weird to suddenly realize, oh, it's all new stuff. I have not played Untitled Goose Game yet. I intend to, and I have the demo for the new Dragon Quest game, but one day I'll get to the actual game. And then take forever to get through that. And then someone else asked me a question. I don't know what to make of it. What kind of life did you imagine your character on Dawson's Creek had? What does that mean? Am I on Dawson's Creek? I don't know which Dawson's Creek character I would be. People did used to compare me to Dawson back in the day, but that's just because I like movies and so did he. So I don't know what this means. I don't know which Dawson's Creek character I'd be now. But I guess Busy Phillips? That's my answer? Busy Phillips. I saw him on her pool once. Fun story. The next track I'm going to play for you comes from a game that I never really paid much attention to until I started Singing Mountain, and that is Street Fighter 1, which in TurboGrafx form is called Fighting Street, which I've mentioned before I think is a dumb name. The soundtrack got a heavy remake for the TurboGrafx port of Street Fighter 1, and it's amazing, and you can probably guess that I'm playing the theme of Eagle again, and it's probably one of my favorite compositions I've ever come across in a video game ever. It literally sounds like a dance party, Italo Disco style, and I will never get tired of hearing this song. Here is Eagle's theme from Fighting Street, composed by Yoshihiro Sakaguchi. Someone asked, if you could hang with any video game character for a day, who? My answer is very simple, Princess Peach. I want to know what's up between her and Bowser. Like, clearly there's not much of an actual relationship between her and Mario. It seems more like a employer-employee relationship, but there's got to be something that keeps drawing her and Bowser together. I don't really want that to happen. I want them to be paired in a relationship, but I feel like Bowser, too, also could benefit from some psychotherapy about what is making them engage themselves in this constant pattern again and again. I don't think it's healthy. And yeah, I just want to make sure she's okay and that like she's like exploring her emotions. I think she probably has a very complicated life. Also, why are you the princess if you're the reigning monarch? Shouldn't you be the queen? Why would the princess be the one in charge? She should be Queen Peach, Queen Toadstool, whatever. Also, where's her family? What's up with that? Would you get in charge? Creepy, right? That's what I'd ask. And sorry, this is the final question I'm answering, but I kind of turned out this way. Someone asked me, have you ever played any porny games, retro or contemporary? If so, what's the music like? Is there a unifying dirty game music style that there is with other game types? I don't know. Most of the porny games out there are not something that would be appealing to me. I did play this one called Strange Flesh, which is a sort of twist on Final Fight that underscores a lot of the homoerotic elements in that game. And yes, by the way, Final Fight's one of the gayest video games ever. I would describe that game's music as being kind of seedy, sleazy, bar-ish music, which is probably the case for a number of other games of this genre, but this is not a standard porny game, and this is as close as I get. Are there porny games that have good music? Please tell me. If you're embarrassed to tell me, like, via social media because you don't want to admit to playing a porn game, I guess you could just leave another response on the survey sheet to let me know. Porn games. Hadn't thought about that. One game that is not porn at all, unless you're a very particular sort of person, is Ninja Warriors, an arcade beat-em-up, kind of like Final Fight, where you play one of two different ninja warriors. And it's the last track I'm really playing in this episode. It's my favorite thing I've learned of after starting this podcast. It is a track titled Daddy Mulk. There's a reason why it's titled that. It sort of doesn't matter. This song is such a jam that even without any real context, I think you'll enjoy it. So please have a listen to that, Daddy Mulk, M-U-L-K, composed by Hisayoshi Ogura. Oh, And that's it. So that's it. That is the end of a much longer than expected episode. Happy 100 to me, I guess. Like I said earlier, there's kind of a twin of this episode where I'm talking less, but it's even more tracks than included in this one that are all gems that I didn't really appreciate until I started doing research for Singing Mountain, and now I love very, very dearly. And it is going to be available on Patreon. So if you just pay $1 a month, you have access to that. So go do that. However, I realize that I don't want to exclude cool content from people that just don't have the money to pay for it. Totally get it. So I'm going to give you an alternate option for how to unlock this content. Currently, I have 42 written reviews on iTunes. That's not star reviews. That's like someone took time to write like a sentence about the podcast in addition to giving me 5 stars or however many stars. 42. If we can get up to 50, I'll unlock that episode for everyone and you can all enjoy some more cool music because I think you all deserve it. And I don't want to exclude people that just don't have the money to afford it. It won't be the case for all the Patreon exclusive content, but this one I feel like being generous about. I know how many people listen to this podcast and it's a lot more than 8. So if you're listening and you've not ever given me a rate and review, please go to iTunes and do that now. If you don't use iTunes, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Most of you do. I look at the stats. And if you can please do that and get me up to 50 rates and reviews, it's only 8, then the content will be free for everyone. So please do that. Does that seem fair? I think it seems fair. If you're a Patreon person and you don't like this, yell at me on social media about it. We can work something out. By the way, in case you voted in the best Mario Princess poll and were wondering which one came out on top, I'm as surprised as anyone to say that it's Daisy. By kind of a considerable margin, beat out Peach, Rosalina, Birdo, Pauline, a lot of characters that aren't even princesses. It was a very fun poll. Again, I'm going to point out that it's strange that some people chose to vote, I don't like any of these. I mean, I get it. You're allowed to have your own opinions, but you can just not give an answer to, I don't know. Interesting what people feel like they have time to do. But yeah, apparently the best Mario vs. Princess is Daisy. Controversial. More than one person actually, in like using different wording, did vote for anyone but Daisy, so I don't know if that brings her down a little bit. Probably not going to think about it again. If you have any questions about the number 100 or me that you didn't ask via the poll, the best way to get them to me is via Twitter at drewgmackey, M-A-C-K-I-E, or at singmopod, S-I-N-G-M-O-P-O-D. You can listen to all previous episodes, all 99 previous episodes of Singing Mountain at singingmountainpod.com or on the podcast listing platform app of your choice. Those ratings and reviews are important. Please get them. And also, if you want to support this show, please go to Patreon, patreon.com/singingmountain. This is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcast network. And if you want to find out about other shows we have on this network, go to tablecakes.com. I have one final track for you. And at this point, you're probably wondering, well, it's been a really long episode, probably building something good. What is the one track that he's like most in love with that he didn't know until he started doing this show? And the sad surprise is it's not really along those lines. I didn't know how it's going to end this show. And then I listened to Pixelated Audio's interview with Megan McDuffie, the composer of the new River City Ransom game, like just this weekend. And it prompted me to actually download the game because it sounded amazing. And I think her music is really, really good. So I'm actually going to close out with one of her songs, which I technically, I guess, learned by doing research for the show, because listening to all VGM podcasts is technically research from the show. And if it's not something you heard yet, I really feel you should. She had this one track called The Hunt, which she composed and also sings on, because she wrote the lyrics and then sings them herself, because I think she's a little one-woman VGM powerhouse. And it is such a great 80s song. I can scarcely believe it's not a real 80s song. It doesn't seem like something would have been just invented for a video game, and yet that's exactly what it is. This song gave me literal goosebumps when I first heard it, and I hope if you've not listened to it yet, you have the same reaction. Again, the track is called The Hunt. It's the mall theme from River City Girls, composed and sung by Megan McDuffie. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for listening to however many of 100 episodes you might have listened to. I promise the 101st episode will not be this long. And other than that, see ya.
Table Cakes production.